You're listening to Rowan Radio On Demand. Download more podcasts at rowanradio.com.
The following program does not represent the views or opinions of the staff or administration of Rowan University or Rowan Radio, 89.7 WGLS-FM.
In conjunction with Rowan University's Sports Communication and Media Program, Rowan Radio 89.7 WGLS-FM presents An Evening with Stephen A. Smith. Now let's take you to Flieger Concert Hall on the campus of Rowan University.
Good evening. So my name is Dr. Jennifer Toll, and I'm the Associate Dean of the Rick Edelman College of Communication and Creative Arts. On behalf of the college and of Rowan University, I'm thrilled to welcome you here tonight. When I look out into the audience, I see so many sports communication and media majors. And there are many of you. In fact, we now have over 300 majors, and we continue to grow each year. Since 2018, sports communication and media has grown to be the largest major in our college, and impressively, the largest program of its kind in the country. We're proud of this, yeah. We are so proud of this, not just because we want to be the best, which we are, but because that means we've created more than 300 opportunities for students to pursue their passions, over 300 pathways that didn't exist before for students to create and communicate what matters to them in the world. Beyond our growth, we're proud of the kinds of learning that we provide for our students. Here at Rowan, we believe that learning doesn't just happen by sitting in a classroom and hearing a lecture or reading out of a textbook. Real learning, the learning that transforms us both professionally and personally, happens by doing. And for that reason, we're virtually the only program in the country that requires all of our students to take at least one internship during their time with us. And our students are everywhere. Our interns and our alums are in NFL films, they're in Major League Baseball, they're in both minor and Major League Baseball teams. We're well represented all over the place. And that's you guys, right? That's you guys that are here tonight. We also continue to be forward-thinking and are excited to launch our new minor and our new bachelor's program in esports, creating yet another opportunity for students to pursue their passions and become innovators in the growing field of esports. We also provide students to attend talks, like the amazing one that we're all here to see tonight, through the Center for Sports Communication and Social Impact. This kind of hands-on learning and networking you cannot get anywhere else. Not at any other institution, not online, it's just here. So, if this is your first time here at Rowan, welcome. This is what we do here. If you're a Rowan student and not a student of the College of Communication and Creative Arts, I encourage you to come check us out. We have courses that can complement your programs of study. We can allow you to add some creativity, some communication skills to your skill set, which makes you both more employable, right, on the job market, but also enriches your life. And if you are one of the 300 plus majors in sports communication media that we have here, our hope is that you will be on this stage someday. We want you to go out there and have successful careers and bring that success back and share it with us. So, this incredible event wouldn't be possible without Neil Hartman, the Senior Director for the Center of Sports Communication and Social Impact. So please join me in welcoming Neil Hartman.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Are you excited?
Yes.
You should be excited. It is great to see the 300 or so sports communication media students that are here. Let me see those books. Get those books handy. And to the other students, faculty, staff, and our neighbors here in South Jersey, we thank you for coming here tonight. It's gonna be a blast, let me tell you. So I was a sportscaster in Philadelphia for 30 years. And I remember in the mid-90s, there was this young sports journalist covering Temple basketball and Philadelphia 76ers basketball. And then eventually he became the beat reporter for the Philadelphia 76ers. And I noticed this guy's quite a journalist. Well, now he is the most prominent voice of the biggest, most powerful sports media outlet in the world. So how did this all come about? A year ago, I saw Stephen A. in Philadelphia, and I asked him, would you come and speak at Rowan? And he said, I'd love to. That was a year ago. So it has taken 1 year for us to get him here to Glassboro, New Jersey, and Rowan University. Please welcome Stephen A. Smith.
What's up, everybody? Can they hear me right?
Yeah, they can hear you.
Can y'all hear me? What's up? It's a nice crowd. It's a nice crowd. I like this.
All right. So Stephen, I have to share this story. He used to live in South Jersey.
Yes, sir.
And not far from where I lived.
Right.
And one day I'm with my daughter in CVS. And who do I see but Stephen A.? Yes, Stephen A. goes to CVS.
That's true. And McDonald's. I'm not going to lie to you.
So, first of all, I want to give you major kudos to a New York Times bestseller. Students, show them the books. Show them the books. Show them the books. As you can tell, the audience is ready for you.
Yes.
Are you ready for them?
I'm always
you
ready.
You have enough energy? You ready to go?
I think I'll be all right.
You gonna be all right?
I think I'll be all right.
You are in for a treat. So, without further ado, Stephen A. Smith, the stage is yours.
First of all, let me start this off by saying, on a particular day like today, when you've got people yelling at me, how about them Cowboys? Let me first say, I don't mind. I mind when they're winning and I hear that. It doesn't bother me when they're losing. Last time I checked, after another 12-5 season, they got their ass bounced right out of there. And I don't care about a final score, 48-32. They were down 48-16. And when I look and I scour the NFC conference, I'm looking at a Philadelphia Eagles team that now has Saquon Barkley. With Hurts, with Devontae Adams, with A.J. Brown, with Dallas Goedert, with a decent offensive line. And I think the Eagles got the best offense in the conference. I'm looking at a Detroit Lions team that won't get worse, the Green Bay team that won't get worse, a San Francisco team that was already better than the Cowboys to begin with. So I anticipate we'll be right back at this again next year. How about them Cowboys after another loss? So my life is good just to know that Cowboy fans everywhere are a bit miserable. Makes me feel good. That's number one. Number two, my condolences about the Sixers, because without Embiid, you know y'all ain't going nowhere. So let's just get that out the way. But Maxie's big time and y'all gonna be all right. The future's gonna be cool. They just need to figure out something to get Embiid healthy. Let's get that out the way, okay? We are all entitled to dream. Dreams can come true, they can happen to you, okay? But if he sees the light of day, that's not good news for you, because that means Hurts won't be on the field for you, so you don't want that, okay? So let's get that out the way. I love talking to students, and I love talking to young folks because, listen, we can joke around and all of this stuff, and you've got a lot of people that come to you and they talk to you. And they talk to you about how hopeful the world is. So many opportunities are out there for you. So many opportunities for you to grab a hold of. Some of your parents are in the audience, your loved ones, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that's true. Nobody's lying to you. But I'm here to tell you that it's still up to you. The world is no joke. And even though you're young and you've got your whole future ahead of you, you got to treat it with the seriousness that it deserves. Because what the world doesn't tell you is that everybody ain't going to win. The beautiful part about sports is that it is as close to reality as you can find when it comes to an actual, visible, tangible meritocracy. There's only one winner. I'm speaking figuratively, of course, because in life there's a multitude of winners depending on what profession you're in and what you're doing. But understand that whatever you want to do, there's somebody else that wants to do it. Whatever you think you can do, well, there's somebody that's thinking they could do it better. However hard you work, there's somebody that's saying they'll work harder. And a lot of times they're convincing decision makers to pick them over yourself. You've got to make a decision as to what you want to do about that. These are the kind of things that parents have tried to tell you, professors have tried to tell you, whatever. Well, damn it, I'm telling you. You need to know that. And you need to embrace challenges with a smile on your face, with the fervor, with the seriousness that it deserves, all the same. Don't run from adversity. Don't run from challenges. Don't run from hard work. Don't run from difficult roads that you might have to travel. All of it is meant for you to ultimately succeed and feel good about what you've accomplished because you knew the road wasn't easy. In all seriousness, that's what needs to be told. Because I got to tell you, the world today is scarier than it has ever been. And I'm not just speaking about myself. I'm 56 years old. I'm not just speaking about myself who was born in 1967. I'm speaking about people who were born in the 50s, the 40s, the 30s that told me and still tell me it's worse now than it ever was. You got civil rights legislation that was put in the law in 1964. You know what, you've heard, read enough and heard enough about what that era was like. Voting rights, 1965. Obstacles, obstacles, obstacles for black folks, for women, for minorities across this country. And still people are saying it was better then than it is now. Because the world is telling you it doesn't give a damn about you. Only what it can get from you. So when you know that and you embrace that and you understand that, then it's up to you to figure out how to maneuver your way through that terrain and to make sure that you're doing the kind of things necessary in order for you to succeed. That's why I love talking to y'all. It's nice to talk about sports. It's nice to have a good time. It's nice to laugh about certain things that transpire. It's all love. We can get along, we can have differences, but we can still get along with one another. The world wants you to believe, based on what we're seeing, that can't happen anymore. You've heard politicians and others talking about how it's okay to disagree as long as you're not disagreeable, but then they go right out and act like a bunch of hooligans. They're disagreeable as hell. They're not setting the shining example for youngsters on the come up. Now, why do I take something like that seriously? Because ain't your parents. They ain't your loved ones. Why would I take something like that seriously? Because they're telling you one thing, they're doing another, they're doing it right in front of our faces, and what they're not telling you along the way is that you're giving folks out in society a license to believe that you can get away with something. There is no way in hell you're going to get away with. I'm here to tell you that. One of the beauties of covering sports and the stories that we cover, think about the stuff that has cost people money. It's not just your inability to play because you got injured. You could get yourself in trouble because you generate the wrong headlines. DUIs, assault, embezzlement, whatever acts of violence you could think of. A cancer in the locker room. Things like that. Where does that come from? That's an organization saying that this individual had a negative effect on the team It was contaminated the collective whole, and we believe your presence is a detriment to what we're trying to build. I bring that up because corporations, employers, businesses make those decisions every day. If somebody's lazy, they're going to spot you. If somebody don't want to put in the work, they're going to spot you. If somebody is selfish instead of selfless, and they about themselves instead of the bottom line, they're going to notice. They're going to sit up there and parse and pick out every possible thing that they can to decipher who's better amongst you. Why am I bringing that up? Because a lot of y'all are sitting next to one another, right? Raise your hand if you're sitting next to your friends. Put your damn hands down. They ain't your friends. You get along with each other. But there's a limit to those friendships. You ain't gonna pay each other bills. You ain't paying one another's mortgage. You ain't making another's car payment. If you got some money, you might lend a brother or sister some. Hell, you might give it to them. Let them come back and ask you too many times and watch what you do. To the victor goes the spoils. You gotta get yours. And in the process of getting yours, sometimes you got to leave other folks behind because they ain't about getting theirs. They're about getting something that's yours from you rather than putting in the work themselves. You got to know who they are. You got to know who they are, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody got anchors in their life. They could be family. They could be friends. There's somebody that just brings you down. Remember that movie Silver Linings Playbook with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence? It was a good one. Robert De Niro was in there. Y'all should appreciate that. It was widely based on the Eagles, for crying out loud. It's true. And Bradley Cooper said something to him, and the guy said, "Oh, he brings me down." You got certain people that'll bring you down because they ain't about anything. And they want you to be about nothing. Because misery loves company. Why am I telling you this? Because the world is changing. It's already changed. Advent of social media, you see people with their negative comments all day, every day. They think they're being slick. They're trying to act like they really got something to say. That's not that, y'all. They're trying to get paid. They're trying to get paid. I'm at the in-season basketball tournament in Vegas. The Los Angeles Lakers are about to go up against the Indiana Pacers in Las Vegas just a few months ago in December. And these folks are outside heckling and they talking smack to me and the whole bit, and I ignore them because they mean nothing. And finally, after minutes of being ignored, the guy said, "Stephen A., could you cuss me out? Could you give me the finger? Could you turn around and do something? Damn, bro, I'm trying to get paid too." What he wanted was a reaction. So he could get a click, attach my name to the headline, and make up something that comes along with my name on it, because that would help him get paid. Then you go on YouTube, and you see some of these videos, and you see people getting paid $100,000, $200,000, because they're doing videos several times a week. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? That's an option for a lot of people in America that's making less than $75,000 or $65,000 a year. Why should this matter to you? Because they can do it to you. The more success you achieve, the more you matter, the more of a profile you get, the more of a target you become. It's the world we're living in, where they can sit up there and put a narrative out about you, and if enough people gravitate to it, catch on to it, and the scintilla of proof is believed to be attached to it, it can cost you everything you're working for. You in school, you young, you got family and loved ones out here making all types of sacrifices for you to make a better way for yourself, and you could literally be striving to do the right thing on an everyday basis, and suddenly, one slip up, cost you everything. That's why you got to watch the company you keep. That's why you got to be careful of who you around, where you around. You got cats in the NBA or the NFL making millions, and you took your behind to a strip club. Hey, I understand it can be tempting. Let me not sit here and lie. But is it worth your paper? Is it worth the reputation? You ain't hear nothing about Stephen A. You think I'm going to sit here and lie to you and tell you in my adult life I never wanted to go to a strip club? Damn it, let me stop. You think I'm going to sit here and lie to you and tell you I ain't never been to a strip club? Hell, you press me enough, I can name about five of them in five different cities. If I'm being honest, bottom line is, the ladies will sit up there and say something. Hell, some of them been there too. But then you grow up. And what happens? All of a sudden, you start working for ESPN, who's owned by Disney, who's Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse, strip club, don't go together. And all of a sudden, you got a decision to make. Who's paying you? What's your obligation to who you represent? It matters. Same is applicable when you conduct yourself in a bad way, if you're breaking laws, if you acting up, if you doing stupid stuff. You're a member of the Eagles. You're a member of Temple University. It doesn't matter. It's not just you that you're representing. It's others. I'm bringing this up because I want you to know everyone's watching you now more than ever before. Everybody got a camera phone. Everybody want to be a photographer. They're watching everything you do. Don't think for one second that you're doing something behind closed doors that nobody is going to see. That is a lie. Somebody always knows. Always. Always. Whatever you do that you think is in the dark will come to light. You got to make decisions now. Everybody want to come up here and they want to talk to you about the importance of your education. I'll be damned if I'm going to talk to you about that. If you don't know your education is important, shame on you. I'm not giving you that lecture. I'm not talking to you about those things. I want you to understand the world that you're living in, the opportunities that are coming down the pike, the digital stratosphere, how that's changed things. It's no longer just linear television or cable television, and it's changing that. Everything's digitized now. And it's going to be even more so within the next 18 months. The world that is waiting for you is not the world that you witnessed just 2-3 years ago. It's changing before your eyes. And it's giving people unfettered access to your life in ways you never imagined. I'm standing here today calling upon you to prepare yourself to have to exercise a level of discipline you never, ever, ever imagined you would have to exercise in your life, because that's how crazy the world is today. Everything is being watched. Everything is being recorded. See these dummies tweeting and then deleting their tweet. What you do that for? It's too late. It's in the stratosphere. You don't get to erase that. It doesn't work that way. You got to be able to live with what you do. There's no coming back. You got to understand that. You got to understand that all your hard work, all your studying, your focus, and everything like that, it does not matter if it comes without discipline. The discipline to deprive yourself of doing things instinctually just because you want to, thinking there will be no consequences when you got your hand out for somebody else's money and somebody else's opportunity. And there's a lot of people out there that'll tell you, especially in this day and age, all of these damn entrepreneurs, and I would know because I'm one of them, They will sit up there and tell you, man, please, I don't want to answer to anybody. I want to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it. Everyone answers to somebody. Stop letting people get away with those lies. I have bosses at ESPN. They answer to higher bosses at ESPN. Who answers to higher bosses at Disney? Who answers to even higher bosses at Disney? Who answers to shareholders? And the shareholders answer to the public, because the public tells them what value you have and what you don't. The public decides whether your stock prices elevate or diminish. How much money you earning, how much money you losing. You see people out here doing exceptional jobs in their chosen profession, and then all of a sudden you see cuts going all over the place. Your aunts, your mama, your daddies, your cousin, your sister, somebody getting fired, laid off, let go. Why? Because somebody up top, numbers crunching, said, hey, we got to meet a certain number. It don't work. We got to get rid of some bodies. This is what they're doing. And it's a lot easier to get rid of you if you don't know how to act. So have your fun, do your thing, live life. All of that comes with it. You're young, you've earned it. And you only live once. Do what you can to enjoy yourself, but within reason, understanding that the world has changed. The world has changed. And competition isn't going anywhere. It's just going to elevate, because people are inventing new ways to make money. But it ain't there for everybody. Some people going to have, some people's not. Who are you going to be? Everything in life ain't about money, but damn it, practically everything is about money. You got to pay bills. You got to take that load off your loved ones. You got to maintain, sustain, or elevate your quality of life. And to do all of that, it's not just about having a skill set. It's not just about having work ethic. It's about having the discipline and the knowledge to know what to avoid, what not to embrace, and where the hiccups and the minefields lie so you don't fall victim to it. Not enough people tell y'all that, but I'm going to tell you. Because they are inventing new ways to make life difficult for those on the come up. And it's difficult enough for those who are older, like myself, to adapt. Imagine how much difficult it's going to be for you who've never even been exposed to it yet. Stay on your grind. Do what you do. Make the most of your life. Do all of that. But understand, when you come to a university, when you come to a college, you came here for a reason. You didn't come here just to party. I know you came to party. And I ain't telling you to stop. All I'm telling you is, you know that's not the reason ultimately you came here. Remind yourself every morning when you wake up, every night before you go to bed, what your highest purpose at this place is. And live up to it. Take the world by storm. Understand that naysayers and obstacles and everything of that ilk is coming your way. Brace yourself for it and be ready to handle it. Because when you look at Stephen A. Smith on TV, trust me, that's what I do. I'm the best. Because I know I'm not. I treat myself every day like I got something to prove. Every morning I wake up, somebody's coming for me. I'm the one that changed the theme and the format of First Take to Stephen A. Against the World. I didn't just do it for the health of the show. I did it for me. Because I knew me. That when somebody is coming after me every day and I'm waking up every day knowing that somebody is coming for me, I'm gonna be on high alert. When they sleep, I'm awake. When they're walking, I'm running. I'm not giving up what I got. I will take them out. That's my mentality. Literally, I don't give a damn who it is. I wasn't good enough to play college or professional basketball. I don't care. I never played football. I don't care. It don't matter to me. They in my lane. That's the challenge I embraced. Most people don't want that stress. I live for it. Damn it, I'm mad when it ain't there. Because it invites complacency. I don't want complacency. I want you to think you could come get me. I want you to think you can mess with me. I want you to think you can out-debate me on this topic, that topic, because I'm going to win. And I'm not going to win because I win the debate. I'm going to win because I know television. And by virtue of me knowing my craft, my profession, and what success is defined by, my goal is not to beat you into a debate. My goal is to be gifted enough at debating to make it riveting television. So even if you get the ratings, you still lost to me because I got the ratings. Even if you win the debate, rather, I got the ratings. And because I got the ratings, and I'm synonymous with First Take, and we're number one, which we have been for 12 years, every month of every year for 12 years. I know because of that, I won. Why did I tell you that story? The definition of winning to most people who come on the show is to win a debate. The definition of winning for me is to get the rating. Why do I want the rating? Because the folks upstairs with this are looking at the numbers, not who won a debate. They played one game, I'm playing another. That's not to knock anybody. Love and respect every single one of my colleagues. And all of them deserve their paper, their bag. But I've been playing on a different level because I'm after more than being a great debater or just good television. I'm after numbers. Why? Because in this book, right here, one of the things that I said to people was I wake up every morning with two primary thoughts: how to make my bosses more money and how to get a lot of it. Because that's their language. And why is that important? Too many folks want what you want, speaking your language instead of the language of the people that make the decisions. Your time will come to speak your language. But while you climb, while you ascend, while you persevere and maneuver yourself through that terrain, you have to be an individual that knows the language of those who make decisions. If you are a professor at this school, you gotta know the language of your boss, of the provost, of the chancellor, of the president. You have to know what they're looking for. You're a football player, you gotta know what the coach wants. You're the coach, you gotta know what the GM wants. You're the coach in the GM, you gotta know what the owner wants. It's not hard to comprehend. It's hard to execute. Because along the way, our egos, our mentalities, it just might get in the way. You gotta reel yourself back and think about the marathon, not the sprint. Immediate and instant gratification is just that. Just as quickly as it comes is as quickly as it will fade. But when you are about the business of building methodically, strategically, you playing chess when others are playing checkers. And that's why with the people I grew up with, who are all doing fine, they have jobs. I have a career. They want to go to the game. I've been to enough games. They used to buy tickets. Now they just ask me to get them for free. They can't do that on their own because they didn't plot and plan. I did. That is the game. Never, ever, ever forget that. And then your time here will not be wasted. You will depart from here. You will shine. You will show the world what the hell you're made of. And that will just be the beginning. Because guess what? Almost every single human being I've ever known is addicted to success. No matter what you think about what you don't want to do or whatever it is, when you're winning, you are all right. You might adjust. You might switch up. You might decide to embrace new challenges or what have you. But in the end, when you're winning, you're okay. Use this opportunity while your student's here to position yourself to win and watch how much better your life becomes. I'm open for questions, y'all. Thank y'all for listening.
I told you he's inspiring, right? So I hope all you students take what he took to heart and listen to what he had to say, because he's talking directly to all of you. And now's the time in your life to make some life changes and life decisions that can affect you for many, many years. We have a microphone over here. So the Sports Cam students will go first. If you have a question, go to the middle or where the microphones are located. So Sports Cam students, just walk. If you have a question, now is the time, okay? So walk up. Jess, if you want to go up there, you can be the first one. OJ's going there as well. There's a microphone on this side. So if you go there, we're going to only take, questions for a short period of time, okay? So if you have a question, go up there. And over here as well. All right. All right, Jess, are you at a mic, or who's at a mic first? OJ, who's there, OJ? All right, so if you haven't met OJ Harris, he had a chance to meet and greet with Stephen A. earlier. OJ, it's appropriate that you ask the first question. Go ahead.
I appreciate it. First off, Stephen A., I've watched you for over 10 years. You've been an inspiration to me, and the real reason why I want to get into the sports industry, it's mainly because of you. I want
to
say that.
Thank you very much.
Question I want to ask you is, how did you start in the Philadelphia Inquirer?
I was a high school writer at the New York Daily News. And I went to a conference, the National Association for Black Journalists. And I met a wonderful, wonderful woman by the name of Sandra Long, who was an executive at the Philadelphia Inquirer, who was in the booth. She saw my material and she really, really liked me. And she set up an interview for me. At the same time, I saw someone else from the Philadelphia Daily News, and they were interested in me as well. And the process was expedited because originally, the Philadelphia Inquirer had intended to hire me in December, but they had gotten word that I was being interviewed by the Philadelphia Daily News. And at that time, in 1994, both newspapers were in the same building. And so when they got wind of the fact that I was being interviewed by the competition, they moved up the process. And they interviewed me and asked me to come on board. At the time, the deputy sports editor was a guy by the name of Gary Howard. Gary Howard, who Neil knows very, very well, was an African-American who was the deputy sports editor of the Philadelphia Inquirer, who ultimately became the executive sports editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. At that time, there were 4 African-Americans who were executive sports editors in the country. He was one of them. But before he departed, he implored them to hire me, and they offered me the job. And Philadelphia was a broadsheet newspaper, you know. Tabloids you just open up like this, broadsheets you flip, and usually the broadsheet papers have a better reputation, meaning the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post at the time, et cetera, et cetera. Tabloids are considered, even though they're exceptional and exceptional writers and exceptional reporters and stuff like that, they usually have, they usually gear towards the sensational. Broadsheet is more, they toe the line a little bit more, dotting I's, crossing T's, and veering away from the sensational per se. Since I had worked at the New York Daily News at the time, which was tabloidish in a lot of people's eyes, I knew that going to the Philadelphia Inquirer would cement my credibility as a journalist because I worked for both publications, both the tabloid and a broadsheet. And by doing that, I had made the right decision because that ultimately positioned me to do some of the other things that I would do down the line that would allow me to get into television, radio, and beyond. And that's how that happened.
I appreciate it, Stephen.
Hello, Stephen. My name is Ryan Schaller. I'm a sports communication and media here with journalism.
Sure.
I write for The Wit here. You're one of the inspirations in my life for sports and one of the reasons why I'm a writer.
Thank you.
If you could give any advice to young writers like myself to have to stand out in this industry, what would it be?
More so than ever before, personalities are important. Most traditional, conventional news people don't want to hear that because it veers away from everything that they try to teach. You're not the story. The story is the story, et cetera, et cetera. And on principle, they're absolutely right, but the world has changed. Like, for example, one of the things that I like to say to people, when you're doing linear television or cable television, it's the story. When you go on YouTube, which is where a lot of people are going right now, it's who's talking about the story that they want to hear about. So we can know the story, but Stephen A. is butting heads with Skip Bayless, or Shannon Sharp is butting heads with Steven Jackson, or something like that. The names, the personalities are what people are gravitating to, and you can't ignore it because what's happening is, whereas with newspapers, let's say, for example, you're the Philadelphia Inquirer, and hypothetically, we'll throw out that they have 600,000 daily subscribers, okay? Well, YouTube has 2.2 billion unique viewers per day. And so when you see that audience, it doesn't mean they're reading or watching your material, but you do have a chance that an inordinate amount of people will watch you and will see you. And as a result, you gain traction that way. And so when you look at it from that standpoint, it presents its kind of challenge. You can't, nor should you, be somebody that veers away from doing everything that you can to objectively go about the business of accruing facts and getting as close to the truth as you possibly can. And when you're giving your opinion, be honest enough to say, this is my opinion, as opposed to people misconstruing it as you spewing facts, unless you're giving them facts. But in the end, in this day and age, because of the advent of social media and YouTube and the digital stratosphere that has really taken the world by storm and a direction that the industry is going in, it does help to create a personality for yourself, to create an identification with your personality. Just make sure it's something that is ethical, that is upstanding, and that is truly and authentically you, because my personal belief is that if you try to be something that you're not, you won't last long, because who gets away with being fake? It really, really, really doesn't work. There's always skeptics lying in wait that are gonna be ready to expose you if you're not your true, authentic, real self.
Thank you.
All right, next question.
Hey, how are you? I'm Jess. Well, Jessica Rodriguez, you can call me Jess.
Okay.
First, I would like to thank you for not speaking about sports, but speaking about facts and the real world and how it is, like being into a career like this. So my question for you is there a work-life balance in what you do? So me starting off in my career right now, currently I work for the Sixers and also an NBA agent's assistant, and I'm already feeling like I don't have time for that life balance or that balance with like family and friends because I'm like consistent work every single day. So what's your opinion on that?
My opinion, first of all, is balance is overrated. A lot of adults in here don't want to hear that. I don't care. Balance is overrated. And here's why I say that. You can spend 50% of your time with your personal life and 50% of your time at work. But that 50% of the time in your personal life, you're miserable. And the 50% of the time that you're at work is contaminated by the 50% that you spent with the personal that you bring over to work because you're just not happy. The objective is to find what you enjoy, what makes you happy, because that's where your balance comes from. I might not be happy that my personal life is kind of messed up when I got to go on the road because my daughters are pissed because daddy ain't home. However, the fact that they are ticked off does kind of put a smile on my face because they miss their daddy. And so because they miss their daddy and daddy misses them, I'm anxious to get back there to see them once I get off the road. But I also got to ask myself, what if I didn't have a successful career? Then I wouldn't be able to do the things that I do for them personally to make them so happy to want to be around me, because I would be unsuccessful, potentially broke, therefore kind of miserable with my personal life because I didn't position myself on a personal level to be all I could be because I ain't handle my business professionally. And so you make those decisions every day. And there's no written formula. There's nothing that anybody could tell you about doing what works for you on a personal level. Some dudes and ladies want to hang out with each other. Some people want to be alone. Some people want to watch TV. Some people want to go out all the time. Your man could love you to death, except for when the game come on. Could you move out the way of the TV, please? And your woman love you, and she want that attention, so when she talking to you, she blocking the TV while she talking to you, because she don't want you watching. That's what DVR's for. Put that bad boy on pause. I'm trying to talk to you. I need love. It depends on the person. And you pay attention to it, but you have to look at your life. Nobody can look in the mirror for you. The closest that anybody can come to that are the people who are most intimate with you, like your parents, your loved ones, who knew you from here, who raised you. I can tell you right now, my daughters are teenagers. I can tell you right now, if you a dude and you don't want to work hard, you got no shot. If you a dude and you want your girl to be silent, just go along and get along, baby. Support me no matter what. Not my daughters. Oh, I can tell you right now, they ain't gonna shut up. They're going to speak their mind. And they're going to know what they're talking about because they're highly intelligent. You got to be made of something to deal with them. I already know, because I have to deal with it, and I'm their daddy who pays their bills and gives them all the luxuries that they have, and they still run their mouth to me. So I know somebody else in trouble. But balance is balance. And you got to find it. They do it for me. A lot of things don't, but they do. But it wouldn't work if I wasn't being successful at what I'm doing, because I know it would contaminate my time with them because I hadn't fulfilled my purpose, what I chose to be my purpose. Nobody can answer that for you better than you. And that's why you have to pay rapt attention to what makes you happy, because that is ultimately what will propel and inspire you. And last but not least, no wealth without health. You got to take care of yourself. I mean, a year ago or so, after I endured COVID and 2 shoulder operations and 2 knee operations, I was the worst. There is nothing where I don't give a damn what fat person you see. I don't give a damn what anorexic person you see. There is nothing worse than a skinny person that's got a fat pot belly. That is just nasty. And that was me. It was so bad, I honestly looked at myself in the mirror and then I said to my girl, she must be with me for the money. She can't possibly want me. I mean, look at me, this is bad. You know, so you know it's bad when you look at yourself like that. So I made it my business. I prioritized my health. I feel better than I felt in 30 years.
I've lost 38 pounds. I'm in shape. I take care of myself. And because I take care of myself, I'm able to enjoy the fruits of my labor. Because I feel good. If you don't feel good, you got headaches, you're annoyed, you're stressed, you're not going to enjoy anything. And no balance comes from that. Okay? Thank you. Next question.
Hi, my name is Marcella. I'm an aspiring news reporter, and I was wondering what your advice would be for those who are interested in feeling their most comfortable and confident selves in front of the camera.
First of all, practice. The mirror is something you look at every day. You get out the shower, you're looking in the mirror. You're brushing your teeth, it's with a mirror in front of you. You're fixing your hair, you're getting dressed. Likelihood is there's a mirror in front of you. Well, damn it, talk to yourself in front of that mirror. Act like you got a microphone in your hand. Repetition, repetition, repetition. Secondly, be yourself. Why? Because if you're yourself, the nervousness will dissipate because as you're talking and being yourself, you know who you are and you can't help it. So you ain't gonna be too worried about what somebody else is thinking when you're being your true, authentic self. When you're trying to fill a role, when you're trying to play a role, that's when you're gonna get yourself in trouble because it's a challenge for you to do something different than what you're accustomed to. So no matter what you're doing, you gotta find elements. You could be a reporter standing there interviewing somebody. You could be somebody reading a prompter. You could be somebody that literally is talking to the masses at a live event with a microphone in front of your face. But if you're yourself, you're far more comfortable in being exactly who you are, no matter who's around, because you know you can't help but be anything else. And most importantly, the likelihood is you'll want to be judged accordingly because anything else is not truly you. And anybody that's being hired instead of you is your representative instead of you. And you wouldn't want that. Okay?
Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Smith. My name's Sam Prince. You've been an inspiration to me throughout my whole life. And, you know, with ESPN Bet coming up and with North Carolina legalizing sports gambling, how do you see sports gambling becoming the future in sports media?
Well, sports gambling is here to stay. The Supreme Court, I believe in 2018, basically given states the right to engage in sports betting. You're going to see it more and more. When you see these instant replays taking place at sports arenas and what have you, it's their fixation on making sure that they're exhaustive in letting the audience and the viewing public know that we are doing everything we can to make sure it's right. Because dollars are at stake. You know, you've got situations. I was with Floyd Money Mayweather. This is years ago. This is before his fight with Pacquiao. And I went to his house to interview him. And Floyd Money Mayweather bet that the Utah Jazz was going to be up by at least 3 points on the Detroit Pistons in the first half. In a regular season game with like 3 minutes left in the second quarter. He was right. He said, come with me. We hopped in this Bentley. He drove down to the Las Vegas Strip, took me into the casino, and they had a plastic bag waiting for him to dump into his duffel bag for $800,000. Now, at the time, I was making less than that annually. And I watched this brother get $800,000 in a half hour. I'm like, good Lord. But you see, there's a whole bunch of folks out there that's gravitating to sports betting because it's a quick fix. And you can get a lot of money. And the sports betting industry, this is $1 billion industry, a multi-billion dollar industry. And so the sports leagues are gonna get involved. They're gonna oversee it. It's not going away. And when you look at a lot of these podcasts, I mean, a lot of them are involved. Prize Picks endorses my podcast. DraftKings endorses others. FanDuel endorses others. There is money to be made because there's millions upon millions of people that are gambling, that are throwing their money into that pot, and there's a lot of money circulating. They're not going away. especially now that the Supreme Court made that decision. Thank you. Next question.
Hi, Stephen A. How are you doing?
How are you?
I just want to say thank you on behalf of all the students here. Thank you for coming to Glassboro, New Jersey. It's lovely here, right?
Thank you.
Thank you for coming tonight and taking time out of your busy schedule. My question for you is, over the last week or so on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, I've been seeing some rumors that you may be, once Jimmy Kimmel moves on from his ABC late night talk show, you might be a prime candidate to be the new host for that show. I'm just wondering, if that offer is ever made to you, would you take it, and how would you respond to such an offer?
Oh, I hosted Jimmy Kimmel in August of 2021. I've been known to be a bit bombastic and demonstrative throughout my career, but I've always known that people find me funny a lot of times. I've never considered myself a comedian, never would consider myself a comedian. But I know that my friends, my loved ones, my relatives, and everybody else, they're like, people don't have any idea how clownish you are, how you make people laugh all the time. And so I wanted to do Jimmy Kimmel. And the now CEO of Walt Disney, Bob Iger, who was at that time the former CEO because he had retired, but still had a connection to Bob Chapek and Peter Rice, who were running Disney, went to them about me hosting Jimmy Kimmel one night. With no promotion or anything, I did the show that night, and I got 1.7 million viewers, which was second place to Stephen Colbert. But that wasn't it for me. What happened is, it was one of the scariest yet greatest experiences of my life. Because what happened is that if you watch the show, you have to do an opening monologue. I've never done an opening monologue in my life. I mean, in sports, I've done it where I'm talking about sports news. But I'm talking about a monologue where you have an obligation to make people laugh. So I'm nervous as hell. I walk in, and if you're on First Take, you got a writer, you got a producer, whatever. Jimmy Kimmel's show had like 8 writers and 12 producers. I'm like, oh man, I got help. So I'm good. And they were coming up with all of these story ideas, these show ideas, these segment ideas and stuff like that. And I said, okay, use this one, not that one, use this one, not that one, et cetera, putting on my executive producer hat, telling them what material I wanted. And then 20 minutes before the show were to begin, I saw all of these people, all of those producers, all of those writers sitting down and looking sorry, looking like sad. I'm like, what the hell happened? I thought somebody died or something. And I said, excuse, what's wrong? And the executive producer of the show looked at me and they said, we did our part, it's on you now. And I said, oh my God. And I knew that I'm about to go on national television, ABC, in front of a live studio audience, and I've never done this before. And here was the trick. I didn't just have an obligation to make people laugh. I had to do it for at least 13 minutes. So just imagine that. What if I'm whack at 1, or 3 minutes, or 5 minutes? I mean, it was a nightmare. And the lights came on, and I just said, bump it, it's time. I'm a sink or swim, let's go. And I did an 18-minute monologue. So, for me, to answer your question, I loved it. I'm not pursuing it. I'm not looking to do it. But if Bob Iger and Walt Disney came to me and they said, we want you to take over Late Night with Jimmy Kimmel and we want you to do that, I would do it. I have other aspirations. I have my own production company. I'm engaging in scripted and unscripted content. I have my podcast, which is very, very important to me, which I own and operate. I plan on building a podcast network. I plan on building a media company. These are the kind of things that I'm planning on doing. And I wouldn't do it unless he asked. But if he asked, I would say yes.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next question.
Hello, Stephen.
Hi there.
I just want to say, thank you so much for coming to Rowan University.
My pleasure.
I'm very honored to hear your speech, and it's very inspiring for all of us. Of your knowledge in the industry is also your inspirational words. Could you tell me a time in where you wanted to let go of all the anchors in your life and you said to yourself, enough is enough, I can achieve more for the future of us in our careers?
You have an idea when you start anything what your definition of success is. But in the process of that, you all reach a point, all of you will reach a point where you know, okay, I've mastered this. I'm good here. I can stand still and let this define all of who I am as a professional on this level, or I could shoot for the stars. Some people are good with that. And a lot of times it's because of things that they have no control over. They're just willing to take that position. You might have family, you might have obligations and stuff like that. And, you know, new challenges might bring on new challenges. Like you might have to relocate. You might have to do a lot of different things. It might take away from your family. All of those things are true. But for the most part, you get to a point where you know better than anyone whether or not this is comfortable for you. Does it have you complacent? Does it have you lazy? Is it allowing you to just be stagnant? And that's always a dangerous thing that you should watch out for, especially when you're an employee, because that means you don't control your own destiny. You don't do it. Somebody else is controlling it for you. So you have to be somebody that's mindful of what you want and where your passion lies and what you're willing to sacrifice and what you're not. Some people are perfectly cool. I got this job, I'm making this amount of money, this is the ceiling for me and I'm good with it. But most people are not that way. And you have to be mindful of that. Nobody knows that better than you, what fulfills you. And sometimes it's who you're working for. I can tell you right now, even though it's the worldwide leader and even though it's ESPN, I'm not at ESPN at this point in time of my career and my life because of ESPN. I'm there because of the bosses that I have. I've got a great relationship with Dave Roberts and Burke Magnus and Jimmy Pitaro and certainly Bob Iger. If I didn't have that kind of relationship with them, with the kind of opportunities I have coming my way, I wouldn't be looking to stay. But I have great bosses who entertain my aspirations, knowing that I want to do more. And because they know I want to do more, and because I work for the largest content provider in the world, it's my oyster if the right opportunities are found, as opposed to them coming to me and say, we want you to do First Take and nothing else. If that was the case, well, I'd be out the door. I'd be out the door. And they know that, and I know that. All right?
Thank you.
Next question.
Hi there, Stephen A. My name is Jason. I actually graduated from Rowan, and I'm an alumni. And I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you so much for coming over here. At one point when I was in school, I had a 1.8 cumulative GPA, and I graduated with a 3.3 cumulative. And you were just one person that really just inspired me every single day, because I would see you get up and I would see you on First Take and the consistency that you did every single day. As somebody that just graduated though, and that's in the field of sports broadcasting and sports media, I just wanted to ask you, how do you encourage the decision makers to take a chance on you?
Well, you have to show them you're worth believing in. See, every employer gets resumes. Resume ain't nothing but a piece of paper with your name on it and information about you. But when you try to cultivate a relationship by letting them know who you are, that goes a long way. Give you an example. In 1993, I'm an intern and I'm working Greensboro News and Record in North Carolina. I'm sending clips. I want to send clips to the sports editor for the New York Daily News. I pick up the phone and I call him. And I say, would you mind at all? I have aspirations. I'm a native New Yorker. I was born in the Bronx, raised in Hollis, Queens. I'd like to come work for your newspaper one day. Would you mind at all if I send you a few clips so you could take a look at it? He said, sure, no problem. His name was Kevin Whitmer. Actually worked at the Newark Star-Ledger, running their sports department for years. Good man. When that Christmas time arrived months later, I went to him. I called him, rather, and said, I'm coming up for the Christmas holidays. May I see you for 2 minutes? I walked. He said, sure. I went to the New York Daily News. This is key, what I'm about to tell you. I literally had my resume and my clips with me. And I made sure not to take more than 2 minutes of his time. I asked for 2 minutes. I got 2 minutes. See, some of y'all miss that. As youngsters, you get somebody in front of you, I just need a minute, I just need a minute. Yeah, I just got one question, and it's 5 questions. You need a minute, and it's 10 minutes. No, that's an instant turnoff. You know why? Because I can't trust you. You didn't do what you said you were gonna do. If you said 2 minutes, keep it 2 minutes. Make sure that those 2 minutes count, that the message that you want to send is palpable and powerful, and it will resonate them with them in a way that will make them not forget your face. Outside of that, keep your word. You said 2 minutes, make it 2 minutes. You gave him your resume, he's got your name, he's got your profile, okay? And on top of it all, he remembers you kept your word. He did. And the second he had a freelance opportunity, he called me. And that's how my career got started. So it's about keeping your word, and it's about ingratiating yourself in such a way that you make an impact as a human being on the person you're talking to. You make sure you're memorable, but not in a stupid way. I've had kids come up to me, I'm gonna take your job one day. You already lost. It's the dumbest thing you could say. Somebody whose help you seek, you're telling them you're gonna take their job. Oh, so you want me unemployed. That's how it's interpreted. That's just dumb. You don't do that because you've alienated the very assistance that you were looking to receive. You don't do stuff like that. You make an impact, but you focus on it being positive.
My name's Max. What do you do to come up with all these crazy rants on live television and bring the energy every day while I listen at home? And what's some advice you would give to someone that's looking to go into sports broadcasting?
First of all, I don't consider my rants crazy. So let's get that out the way. Okay, that's number one. Number two, let me keep reminding you, I'm a journalist by trade. You wake up every day when you're in my profession. As Neil will tell you, what's the story? What is the compelling things? What are the compelling things that people are interested in hearing about? Reading about, watching about, you have an idea. Not to mention, if you're me, who's not just a talent, but the executive producer of First Take, I get the ratings every day. So what happens is, literally from 10 to 10:15, I know the number. From 10:15 to 10:30, 10:45 to 11 o'clock, 11 to 11:15, 11:15 to 11:30, 11:30 to 11:45, 11:45 to 12 noon. I literally get the ratings for every single quarter hour of my show daily, which means I know that you liked it when I talked about the Cowboys. You weren't interested when I talked about the Mets. You liked when I talk about Francis Ngannou getting put to sleep by Anthony Joshua. You loved it even more when I talked about Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul. You liked it when I talked about John Bones Jones. You loved it when I talked about Conor McGregor. I'm getting the numbers. I'm paying attention. So in the process, number one, I'm playing the hits because that's the kind of stuff that you want to talk about. NFL's king, college football's very, very potent. NBA, not far behind. College football, even wrestling's popular. Baseball, not so much, even though it's elevating now, because more athleticism has been infused into the game because of the rules changes. You're paying attention to all of these things. So you're feeding the audience what it says it wants, while at the same time being a bit courageous in showing other things that you may want them to appreciate that they may not have appreciated, because that's what you do as a journalist. That's what you do as a communicator. That's what you do as a pundit. You don't talk about what you want. You talk about what you know they want. The easiest way to lose is when you ignore the consumer. No matter what you're doing, if the consumer is being ignored because you got your preferences, the consumer will tell you, go ahead on with your preferences. We're gonna live our lives over here and we'll watch somebody else. That's the difference. Every day, every year, I'm constantly looking to modify, not necessarily change, but modify and alter to some degree the product that I'm giving to the audience, because what the audience wanted last year, the audience ain't gonna want this year. What they want this year, they ain't gonna want next year. And I'm gonna make sure that the audience knows at all times I'm striving to give them what they're looking for in the midst of maintaining my true authentic self. Not by sacrificing it, because then that's not real, that's not authentic, and they certainly don't want me to be phony. But if I can be true and authentic to myself while paying rapt attention to what the audience wants, the chances are it's gonna be a winning formula. And as a result, I'm going to succeed. And when you succeed, all of a sudden that forces a level of gravitation as well, because when you win, people want to know, why the hell do you win? What's so special about you? Let me figure this out, which is why y'all asking me the questions y'all asking. Because you want to make sure you know what it takes to win. And you feel like I have the ingredients to tell you, which I do, because I've won. And that's what it's about. And that's what you have to remember.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen A. Smith. Thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. We appreciate it, and most especially, we appreciate Stephen making the effort. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to An Evening with Stephen A. Smith on Rowan Radio On Demand. You can check out more podcasts of your favorite Rowan Radio programming by searching Rowan Radio On Demand on your podcasting platforms.